Hey, what's up, everybody? My name's MJ, and you're listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. As usual, I'd like to give a quick shout-out to my local game store, Guardian Games. You can find Guardian Games on the web at ggportland.com. Today's episode of the podcast is a very special edition of the podcast, where I, instead of going over a specific discussion topic like I typically do with my lightning builds, control room, or just standard interviews with other content creators and members of the Magic the Gathering community, I'd like to use this opportunity today to provide a little bit of hype for the white-bordered EDH game that is actually going to be happening on the day of the recording here, which is April 29th, 2021. Now, if you haven't heard of White Border EDH, it is a local EDH meta format where only cards that were available in white bordered sets, so basically anything from Revised Edition on to 9th Edition Core Set, are legal. So every card in all four of the decks that are going to be performing in a stream on Coach J-Ro's channel, the Unsummoned Skull on Twitch, are going to be containing strictly white border cards. There's not going to be a single black border card in any of the four decks that are going to be participating. So I figured that I would utilize this opportunity to give the players who are going to be participating in tonight's game a chance to talk a little bit about their decks and what they're trying to do. So without further ado, I'd like to introduce our first entrant and the creator of the format, my friend Mono White Border, aka Peter.
All right, MJ, I don't know if I will be able to do this when I get home, so I'm going to do my best Mark Rosewater impersonation and do a drive from work in order to do this. So without further ado, I am playing Dekon Blackblade, who was the first commander I ever built when I got back into Magic during college. He reads, he's two, one white, one black, and two blue for a star creature whose power and toughness is equal to the number of lands that you control. And the goal of my deck is to Voltron people out with commander damage. But where most Voltron decks have bunches of equipments, or a lot of aura synergies, or some way to make their commander really big, you don't really have that in white border. The best white border equipment you'll find is Luxdon Warhammer, which is fantastic, and it's in the deck, and is a real killer piece if I can actually get my hands on it in the game. But after that, you're looking at like things like Leonin Bola, which I don't think even affects the power of Dekon Blackblade. So how am I going to supplement missing out on those equipments? Well, Magic prior to the introduction of the equipment subtype in Mirrodin had, I guess, what you could call pseudo-equipments. They are artifacts that you pay mana, you activate them, and you tap them to give your creature some sort of effect. +2/+2, Lance gives first strike, things like that. And they don't untap on your upkeep, and they continue to give that bonus to the creature. So Ashnod's Battle Gear, Rune Sword are both examples of that are in the deck. And along with that, I have a variety of creatures, which I'm referring to as Squires for Dekon, that give an assortment of abilities as well. So there's some that tap to give flying, there's some that tap to give a bonus, some that tap to give vigilance. And all of that is supporting this primary plan, which is make a big Dekon by playing lands each turn and pumping them up with pseudo-equipments and creatures, and then deal lethal commander damage, hopefully to Tyler first, because you gotta knock out Tyler, and then we'll worry about J-Ro and MJ after that. And then beyond that, we also have a lot of things that untap our creatures. So we have tons of activated abilities in the deck. And that's what we're leaning into to go along with our Voltron strategy. So we got untappers like Jandor Saddlebags. And then creatures that tap to do a variety of things. Draw cards, tap other creatures, like Hrovokin Sorcerer. Beyond that, the deck just gets rounded out with some control pieces, disenchant, some weird removal spells like Reprisal, Cards like Wrath of God to clear out the board. And then just some random spicy inclusions that I found along the journey. The deck was built card at a day for, you know, roughly 60 days before I got to the land base. And so it was just kind of built very organically as I found cards that seemed interesting to go along with the strategy that I slowly developed over this 60-day period. So I haven't played it yet. I am super excited to finally give it a try and just see what happens.
Sounds good. I can't wait to see how Dacon does in our white border game later on today. Next up is another frequent collaborator on this podcast, so without further ado, I'd like to let Coach J-Ro talk about his Sea Monster Tribal deck.
Hello, I am J-Ro, the Unsummoned Skull, and this is a breakdown of my contribution to the Mono White Border Throwdown. My deck is a Sea Monsters deck, designed around the commander Svitri Skarzen. So, to begin with, my deck is only two colors, whereas the others are three. This allowed me to be a little bit more ambitious with some other decisions. So there are some high CMCs. There are some high number of blue pips on cards. So I have a mana base that helps with that. So I run Crystal Vein and Svelenite Temple and Ebon Stronghold as ways to increase mana with individual lands. I have a couple of cycling lands, so I'm able to get through to the meat of the deck. I also have the full assortment of Tron lands, thank you 8th edition, even though some people don't like it. Svitri herself is a vanilla creature. She is a 6/4 for 7, which isn't a great rate, but she is just a gorgeous art. It shows her on what looks to be a sea dragon coming out of the water, and the flavor text tells you everything you need to know. Even the brave caused to tremble at the sight of Svitri Skarzen, who else has tamed Skarzen's dragon. Now, while there aren't a lot of dragons within the Dimir colors, there are some drakes. So those drakes are kind of the dragon that she's on, and the early creatures that are able to peck away at some players as they're getting their three-colored mana bases set up, those greedy people. Then there are a large amount of ramp spells. Now, with every deck that I make, I run about 10 ramp spells, 10 spot removal, 10 card draw, 5 mass removal, and then about 20 to 25 win cons. So ramp was kind of a hard part because there aren't a lot of mana rocks. I'm running 3 of them. There aren't a lot of rituals. I have a couple of them. And there aren't a lot of mana dorks, although I do have at least one of them. But what I can do is polymorph and zombify, use those types of effects to cheat on mana costs. So I pay 4 for something that costs 8, and I feel pretty good about myself. I do have ways to deal with creatures in the interim, particularly ones that are high costing. That's one of the benefits of being the Unsummoned Skull, is I have lots of unsummon effects. My card draw is somewhat limited. I have a lot of looting effects, which helps to fuel the zombify plan. I also consider Gravedigger to be a card draw spell because it provides a body and returns a creature card, which is card advantage, which I consider part of card draw. There are also 5 mass removal effects, 4 of which are pretty ubiquitous. Evacuation, Plague Wind, Nev's Disc, Kirkle's Recall, those are all pretty well known. The one that's not as well known is Siren's Call. It's an instant. That makes all opponents' creatures able to that are able to attack must do so. Any non-wall creatures that can't attack are killed at the end of the turn. So this is a way to force people to play offense. It's also a way to get rid of utility creatures, either forcing them into bad attacks or making the owner sack them. Then come the big boys. Probably the biggest of them is Tidal Kraken, which is a 6/6 unblockable for 8, which I can make a lot earlier. I do have a number of other big guys in there, so essentially once the deck gets going, it'll really get going. Mortivore and Revenant are two other big, beefy guys who come down and start bashing face. So hopefully the rest of the players are ready to get swept under the waves.
Sounds terrifying there, Jero, but we'll see who gets swept under the waves at the end of this white border game. Up third is a new entrant to this podcast. I'd like to introduce Tyler, aka BitBoardGamer, on Twitter, who has a very similar deck to mine, running Chromium, another one of the original Elder Dragons. Let's hear what he has to say about this deck.
What is up, my brush lads and lasses and everybody in between? I'm your homeboy, Tyler, bringing you my white-bordered Chromium Commander deck. This deck is real simple, y'all. See, we want to get Chromium on the field. We want to get other flyers on the field. We want to attack with all those flyers because Chromium really is only good when he's attacking because he's got Rampage. We got the Circles of Protection. We're going to throw those down so that no one can hurt us. This is the plan. This is the goal. We're going to blow up stuff. We're going to take to the skies. We are going to roast the other dragons. We are going to roast the other warriors. We are going to take them down with, I don't know, half of the cards in this deck. I don't know what they do. I've played this deck one time, but you know what? I don't care. We're going Commander 2003. No one needs to know what their cards do. We are going in hardcore. We're going to take to the skies, giant metal dragon. How does he fly? I don't know. But we're going to burninate the countryside. Let's go.
Big shout out to Tyler for providing that excellent recap of his deck, as well as a whole lot of early 2000 slang to make this feel like the period piece that is the same time period as the cardboard that we're going to be playing with. But for last, and certainly not for least, you have my deck, so I'm going to go into my introduction right now. On today's game, I'm going to be playing my Palladium Moors Enchantress deck. Now, Palladium Moors is another one of the Elder Dragon legends in the Naya color pairing. She's a 7-7 with Flying and Trample that costs 2 generic white-white, red-red, green-green, and also has the same Texas Chromium that during your upkeep, pay the Naya color, so again, white, red, green, or bury Palladium Moors. And I built this deck around the concept of the Enchantress theme. Obviously, I'm leaning heavily into a lot of green's abilities to be able to make big creatures and beat face, but also a lot of white. So I tried to build this deck around the two Enchantresses that are legal in this format. Yavimai Enchantress, who is a 2-2 creature for 2 and a green that reads Yavimai Enchantress, gets +1/+1 for each enchantment in play, as well as the classic Verdurin Enchantress, a 0-2 human druid who costs 1 green-green and says whenever you play an enchantment spell, you may draw a card. Now, I'm playing a whole bunch of enchantments in this deck, some of which, like Knighthood, give all of my creatures first strike, which will allow me to try to be able to beat my opponent's faces in with a lot of combat damage without losing my creatures. There are things here that allow my creatures to get stronger, a lot of auras, such as regeneration, which typically, as it says, allows me to regenerate target creature. I have something like Wild Growth, which allows me to gain extra mana whenever I tap a land for mana. I have something like Blanchwood Armor. So enchanted creature gets +1/+1 for each forest I control. And given the fact that I'm running 14 forests in the deck, I'm probably going to be able to give whatever creature I want a whole lot of power toughness boost utilizing this Blanchwood Armor. As far as for creatures, I tried to pick a little bit from each color, and so obviously a lot of the creatures are green because I have tried to build the deck around a lot of creatures that fall under the Pride of Lions and the Thorn Elemental style, where these creatures can deal their combat damage to the defending player as though it was not blocked. So I have added in every single card that is legal in this format in green to the deck. This includes Lone Wolf, Pride of Lions, Rocks, and obviously the original Thorn Elemental. And with the concept being that I can swing these at my opponents using the pump-up effects from the enchantments that I have and swing for massive damage that they'll have to take no matter if they block or if they don't block, because these creatures are going to deal their damage to the defending players no matter if they get blocked or not. And then the fact that I have things like regeneration as well as pacifism means that I can get rid of problematic blockers or allow my creatures to survive combat instead of dying if they run into something that's larger than them. If we look at the instance that I have here, obviously I have a lot of artifact destruction, enchantment destruction, because again, my opponents are going to be playing a whole lot of enchantments and artifacts. This is definitely something you deal with when you're playing against blue players, and you're the only person who's not playing blue at the table. So I had to find ways to try to be able to get around this issue by having some ways to be able to destroy artifacts so that my creatures can get in through for damage. I also obviously have the eponymous lightning bolt in here that hopefully I'll be able to hit someone for one when they don't expect it, which I can either use to hit someone for three in the face early on, end of turn before my turn, or be utilized as a removal spell to get rid of someone's pesky blocker. Again, looking at you, Peter, since Dakon may, early in the early turns, may not have the highest power toughness, so there may be a lightning bolt coming his way, depending on how things shake out. I also have a whole bunch of interesting sorceries here, mostly ramp spells. Again, I'm the only player at the table who's going to be running red, and I'm also the only player who's going to be running green. So I have access to a whole bunch of interesting ramp spells. Again, that includes things like Wood Elves, which obviously allows me to tutor for a land put on the battlefield on a 1-1 creature, but I also have things like Nature's Lore and Rampant Growth in this deck, which also allow me to tutor out land. So hopefully I'll be able to pump out Palladium Moors faster than my opponents, because I'll be able to have a land-based ramp versus their artifact ramp. Obviously, I can blow up their ramp using something like Shatterstorm, which is also in the deck, or my opponents could blow up each other's artifacts, but the fact that I have safer land-based ramp gives me a little bit more of an advantage when I go into the game. Something I'm actually really excited about is actually the kind of secondary commander for this deck, and that is Johan. Johan is a 5-4 legend, it costs 3 in the Naya colors, so 3 generic white, red, green, and reads, as long as Johan does not attack and is untapped, attacking does not cause creatures you control to tap. Basically, Johan gives all of my creatures vigilance as long as he doesn't attack. So hopefully if I'm able to pump him out early, all of my creatures are going to have vigilance, and I'm going to be able to smash some face before they can even know what hit him. I hope very much that this episode has provided you some interest in trying out white-bordered EDH deck building for yourself. If you're interested in seeing how this particular game goes down, you can catch us on Coach J-Ro's channel, The Unsummoned Skull, at twitch.tv/unsummonedskull at 9 p.m. Eastern today, April the 29th, 2021. If you can't make it tonight, you can always catch the replay on twitch.tv/unsummonedskull or on Tyler's YouTube channel, which I will link to in the show notes. Again, you've been listening to the MTG in Quarantine podcast. My name's MJ. Have a great rest of your day, everybody, and go Palladium Moors!